Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
This is True Crime Cast. Jamie with John here on the week after our 5-year anniversary. Excited to start the next 5 years, John.
Yeah, how about it? And how about that new intro? It's growing on me, and I like get excited when I hear it. I remember when we first started, that was one of the first things we did as a company, was to create our intro music. And so it feels new, like a new show, but it's still us.
Yeah. I really enjoy that. And I really enjoy getting new reviews over on Apple Podcasts. This one comes from Shimanif from Australia, and the title is great. And it just says, my new favorite podcast channel.
Awesome.
So thank you for that. Favorite spelled with a U. So we know it's one of our friends across the pond. This one says 5 years of 5 stars. One of the first 3 podcasts I started listening to around the same time in 2020. True Crime Cast is the only one. I am still a Patreon member. They are responsive and interactive on social media. They genuinely care about their listeners, as well as telling a story as honestly and accurately as they can. I love how they give their appreciation to their writers or inspirations. Their other podcast, Bless Their Hearts, is awesome too, and I always laugh out loud at some point during each week's episode. That's also a 5-star podcast. Thank you, Jamie and John. I'm so grateful for your dedication, energy, and time you put into every episode on both podcasts. This comes from Lunar Rock. So that was very thought out and specific, and really, really thank you for all of those kind words.
Oh, thank you, Luna. We appreciate that. We appreciate all you guys. So, if you don't mind, it really helps out the show when you leave a 5-star review. It helps the algorithm to be in our favor and get us into the ears of new listeners. I want to also thank some folks over on Patreon. We had 2 folks that joined this week, Penelope and Carla. Both of those came in at the $3 level, but they took advantage of a 15% discount when they joined the annual membership. So guys, thank you, Carla and Penelope. We hope you all enjoy November's episode over on Patreon. Was about a ghost that may have helped solve their own murder. Yeah. And I know that sounds crazy. I took a pretty hard stance. Jamie took a pretty hard stance on whether or not that's possible. Go check it out. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah. And that's just around $30, and you get 4 years worth of material, 4+ years of bonus episodes and other things. So,
and if you don't want to join the annual, it's fine. For, you know, I always think of the old commercials, for as little as a cup of coffee, you can enjoy 4.5 years worth of True Crime Cast Patreon.
Oh, it's cheaper than a cup of coffee at this point. Coffee's expensive.
It's like half the price of a cup of coffee. But guys, we love putting over those the content over there. So go check that out. But Jamie, we have a good one today. So why don't you get the ball rolling?
It's been a while since we just covered an old fashioned serial killer.
Yeah.
It has. That's weird. So let's dive into that. We're going to be talking about Todd Kohlhepp, who was known in the Carolinas as a killer. And we're going to tell you about the details of his life and case. And we're going to start out with the story of Kayla Brown and her 32-year-old boyfriend, Charles David Carter. Kayla was 30 years old when this happened. She went missing from Anderson, South Carolina. This took place on August 31st of 2016, for 2 months, investigators were looking for the couple. When they were finally able to track their cell phone locations to an area of property that was around 95 acres. And John, that I think people hear 95 acres, oh, well, that's like a big farm. That's like, you can't see across 95 acres. This is a big plot of land and a lot of places to hide bodies, right?
My grandparents' farm growing up was 100 acres, and I felt like there was not a bigger piece of property out there. Now, I know in like Texas, Wyoming, Montana, there's ranches that are like 100,000 acres. That's like a county in Kentucky.
Yeah.
So 100 acres, yeah, it's a big piece of land.
This couple had actually been hired to work on that land and to clear some brush before they had gone missing. And on November 3rd of 2016, Spartanburg County Police went to the property where they heard banging noises coming from a big metal storage container. And that's where they found Kayla Brown, chained up. She had been kept in there and had been tortured for around 65 days. And you guessed it, her kidnapper was the property's owner, Todd Kohlhepp.
Todd Kohlhepp was born Todd Christopher Samspel on March 7th, 1971 in Fort Lauderdale. So his parents divorced when he was just 2 years old, and his mother took custody of him and moved him to South Carolina. She married Carl Kohlhepp in 1976, and Todd took his stepfather's name. And Todd's childhood was pretty chaotic, as we see with a lot of serial killers. He was abused by his grandfather. His stepdad was allegedly just hateful and despised him. So Todd wanted to go live with his biological father. And as a child, he showed behavior that was violent, especially towards other children and animals. And again, that's like first triad of that McDonald's triad, right, Jamie?
Yeah, we see the McDonald's triad again is kind of a series of behaviors that we see for most people that end up being sociopaths, psychopaths, or serial killers, and that includes violence toward animals, arson, and bedwetting beyond a reasonable age. And I feel like violence toward animals is the one we see most often in these cases.
So as early as even in nursery school, he would destroy other kids' school projects, and he was thrown out of the Boy Scouts for bad behavior. Jamie, I don't know that you've had kids in Boy Scouts, but I went to Boy Scouts when I was a boy, and I've took my son to Boy Scouts when he was younger. I saw some pretty bad behavior in there. I can't imagine how bad it would have to be thrown out of Boy Scouts.
Like,
I feel like our scout leaders just handled a bunch of bull crap pretty well.
Yeah.
So, not great start there. He shot a dog with a BB gun, and he even killed a pet goldfish by using Clorox bleach. So kind of showing a demented mind early on. You know, some kids, bless their hearts, they just get in trouble at school and places like that. But now this has escalated to even shooting a dog and killing a goldfish. Like, these are big deals.
Yeah, and not just like killing a goldfish. Like, this is essentially, you pour Clorox on something, you are pouring acid on it so that it will like dissolve and melt, and that's a horrific death. And I know goldfish are like, I don't know, 10 cents, and we think of their lives as not worthy, and that's fine. But to see somebody kill anything in that brutal of a manner is scary.
Especially a child.
Yeah.
Like, children are supposed to be sweet, innocent. They love goldfish just as much as they love Mamaw, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, he started counseling at 9 years old, where he was described as explosive and preoccupied with sexual content. Again, 9 years old and explosive and preoccupied with sexual content. So makes me think, Jamie, that he was either exposed to sexual content at a very early age, or there might have been some sexual abuse happening.
I was giving that some thought too, and there almost has to be some kind of exposure. Like, I know that naturally our bodies go through developments, that there are hormones that get us thinking about certain things more than others, but at that early of an age to be, and this says preoccupied, everything I've researched says basically obsessed with sex and the idea of sex at nine.
Yeah.
I think there has to be some kind of outside source that leads him in that direction. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. So it was either, like you said, exposure, seeing porn or seeing things done in front of him that he shouldn't be witnessing, or experimented on himself, like sexually abused himself. But he went on to eventually spend 3 months in a Georgia psychiatric hospital just because of his, you know, his issues. And he could not get along with other children. He was violent and explosive towards them as well.
In 1983, Todd's mom was going through her second divorce to Todd's stepdad. So Todd got his wish, and he was sent to live with his biological father out in Tempe, Arizona. Out there, he learned some skills that ultimately would not serve him well in adulthood. He learned how to make small bombs and actually blow things up with his father. Again, as a kid, I remember using firecrackers to blow up like pop cans and putting them in like Hot Wheels to see what would happen. Curiosity's fine, but this led into him being, again, obsessed. He had an obsessive personality, and he started collecting things like bombs that he made, started collecting firearms at a very young age. But this happy time that he was having with his father didn't last. He had always wanted to live with his dad, and he gets there, and there's this honeymoon period. But eventually, Todd started to, he would describe it as hate his father for spending all of his time out on dates and with women and not as much time with Todd as Todd expected him to. So at this point, he demanded to move back in with his mother, but they continued to make excuses to keep him with his father out in Arizona. So Todd is perpetually unhappy wherever he goes. He has an obsessive personality, usually leading to things that aren't exactly healthy or age appropriate. And he's just having a hard time. And we use the word chaotic at the beginning of the episode, and I think his childhood is living up to that.
Yeah. I mean, not only are just things in his life bad outside of his family relationships, but I mean, basically this kid is just not wanted by anybody. You know, he's despised by his dad, his granddad's abused him. And now like things aren't what he was hoping they would be with his biological dad when he moved back in. And seems like his mom doesn't want him at this point either. So you stack bad on top of bad on top of bad. And it all boiled over on November 25th, 1986. Todd was 15 years old, and he got a 14-year-old girl to go out of her home by telling her that her boyfriend wanted to talk with her. Then he threatened her with a revolver, brought her back to his house, and that's where he tied her up, taped her mouth shut, and raped her. Again, he's only 15 years old, and this girl is 14. When he was done, he walked her home, and he told her that if she told anyone, he would kill her younger siblings. And dude, in my line of work, I see this so much with perpetrators where they threaten to kill the victim's families as an attempt to get them not to talk. But she did talk, and within hours, Todd was arrested and charged with kidnapping and sexual assault.
His psychiatric evaluation showed that he had borderline personality disorder. And when I read about personality disorders, I always feel like they're named a lot more tame than they actually are. Like oppositional defiance disorder makes me think of a kid who's just sitting there like, no, I won't eat my vegetables. But that's not it. It's much more extreme, as is borderline personality disorder. A lot comes from that. He showed signs of emotional disturbance and a high IQ of 118, which mental illness combined with high intelligence can be dangerous. The judge in the case said that Todd was very bright and should be advanced academically, but was behaviorally and emotionally dangerous. I think that's a really good way to describe Todd at the age of 15. He was convicted and sentenced to 15 years in prison, and he had to register as a sex offender when he got out. Again, he's 15 years old, and he's getting 15 years for this rape charge.
Yeah, it seems as if they tried him as an adult. I mean, a lot of times with kids, their punishment won't last longer than when the age they become an adult.
And usually 15, 16, 17 is where we see that kind of area where they do make that determination. And remember, this wasn't just, and I say just, like sexual assault and rape are awful. Like he did it at gunpoint. Like yeah. There was so much more to this. When he asked why he raped this girl, he said that he was mad at her father, that her family had made him mad, and he had this desire to have sex, and that was a way to get back at her. It said that none of his legal guardians visited him in prison, but his mom did write a letter to the judge to try to get his sentence lowered. In that letter, she said, "I promise this is not who my son is." You can see that by the fact that he walked her home while this was over. They're trying to enhance his character by saying, after he raped this girl at gunpoint, he walked her home. See, he's not all bad. I think that may be the most tone-deaf statement that we've ever read on this podcast. It is mind-boggling to me that somebody would even think to say, oh, look, He walked her home after he robbed her, or after he raped her at gunpoint. It's absurd.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Not surprisingly, Todd would eventually get out of prison. And when he got out, things ended up getting, believe it or not, worse. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk about his advanced behavior after getting out of prison.
So Todd was released in August of 2001 after serving 14 years. It's kind of rare, Jamie, that we see people getting sentenced to 15 years and then actually serving 14 of those. Like, I feel like a lot of times it's like, we're going to give you 20 years. You can serve two.
Yeah, you know? It's usually a ridiculously low amount. And again, he was 15 when this happened. So I would have thought for him, this would have been especially so. It makes me think that maybe his time in prison wasn't productive for him.
Well, surprisingly, after he got out of prison, he moved to South Carolina where his mom was living. But while he was in prison, he got a bachelor's degree in computer science. And after his release, he got another bachelor's degree in business administration marketing. So I don't know. I don't know that he was reformed, but at least he took advantage of some higher education while he was in there.
And remember, highly intelligent individual. I'm sure he was able to get these degrees with fairly little effort.
So he's a convicted felon. He's a sexual offender, but he was able to get a job as a real estate agent by simply lying about his felony charge on his application. So from there, Todd built a firm of a dozen agents. So he's not just a real estate agent. He is a broker. He has his own firm. He was recognized as the top selling agent in the Carolina region. And he also went on to get his private pilot license. Todd eventually bought a 95-acre piece of land and put an $80,000 fence around the property. I don't know. I own like an acre and a half, and I don't even know that a fence would cost like $10,000, but why would you spend $80,000 on a fence? Like, put up some barbed wire, brother.
I think he knew what he was doing and wanted to keep people away. And I think back to him lying about this felony charge to get his license. I would think real estate, while I get it, it's, you think of it as being a business and not like, I mean, he spends a lot of time alone with people, and that scares me to think about that. So I think that's important here.
And it's a government monitored program. Like, you have to get a state license to be a realtor. So it's a little surprising to me that there's no background checks ran when you're making your license with the state.
One of Todd's customers had an interesting take on her experiences with him. She said he was really professional most of the time. He was very outgoing and he was very hardworking. But she said that he just continued to talk about all of his guns, his firearm collection, that he sometimes used sexual innuendos. So he wasn't always on the up and up with being appropriate. And again, he's talking about a firearm collection as a felon, a person who's not allowed to own firearms. So this seems like he's still not in a place where he's moved on from those things that plagued him as a child. Being obsessed with weapons, being obsessed with sex is still something that's ongoing. And it's something that he brought up to a customer. It's not like somebody he knew well, he talked to about this. This came up in his everyday conversation. There was another woman that said that he often got angry in his dealings with other real estate agents and people in the business. And he was really condescending when he talked to people. And there was a banker that said that Todd watched porn while he was at work in his real estate office. So all these issues he's always had when he gets out of prison, even though he's thriving professionally, personally, he still has these vices.
And that shows you that he's sick, like in the head. Like, we had a security guard at work one time that was caught watching porn, like in a room with a few other people. And he did not come to work the next day because he was fired.
Absolutely, as he should have been.
But, I mean, I guess when you own the business, you know, it's hard to fire you.
It's a great point.
So, going back to the property where Kayla Brown was found chained up, according to Kayla, she watched Todd shoot her boyfriend Charles 3 times in the chest and then bury him in a blue tarp. Now, Todd's mother said that he killed Charles because he had a really smart mouth. Again, this mom just making excuses for her son. Like, it's sick.
There's no reason to just cold-bloodedly kill somebody. A smart mouth is nowhere close to a list of things you can even argue with me as a good reason.
Todd also said that he kept Kayla captive because she didn't do anything wrong and that he didn't want to hurt her. I mean, that's bullcrap. Kayla told police that Todd killed Charles because Todd was mad at her. While being held captive, Todd raped her repeatedly. And it's also said that he walked her around the property and showed her graves of other bodies that he had buried. So, I mean, you're walking around this place with this guy. That has to be scary as crap, right? Like, you're probably seeing where you're going to end up.
Yeah, yeah.
So Kayla said that Todd would brag about his murders, and he said that he was even nearing the triple digits in people that he had killed. I don't know. I think I would rather you just shoot me than to have to deal with this. If it's like, it's sexual abuse, it's trauma. It is awful what she's going through.
This is psychological torture. And he would tell her that eventually, if she earned his trust, he would let her walk around the property on her own. Of course, he never had intentions of this, but he just continued to abuse her physically, psychologically, emotionally, a horrible situation. When he was eventually arrested, he actually confessed to another murder of another couple. This was 20-year-old Johnny Coxie and his 26-year-old wife, Megan McGraw-Coxie. These two had been missing since December 22nd of 2015. It said that Todd often ate at the same Waffle House where Megan worked as a waitress. And his behavior at the restaurant was so disturbing, again, not surprising, this is just who he is, that servers asked one of the male cooks to take Todd's order so that they didn't have to interact with him. After he confessed to this, police searched Todd's property and they found the bodies of Johnny and Megan Coxie. He told police that he had hired them to clean his rental property, which is, again, the same story that came up with Kayla and Charles. Johnny was shot first and was killed by a gunshot wound to the torso. He kept Megan in the storage container for a week, raping her daily, and then eventually shot her in the head. According to the coroner, the two were identified by their tattoos because they had started to decompose and they had been obviously abused and wounded, but they were able to identify the bodies. And at this point, we have three murder victims from Todd, making him a serial killer. But unfortunately, we're not done.
I'm going to process this just a little bit, Jamie, if you don't care. Like, I feel like every serial killer we've ever covered was in the 1900s. And I know that sounds ridiculous to say that because that was just for us, it feels like just yesterday. But we're covering a serial killer today that was killing in what I call the modern era.
In the last decade.
Yeah. I mean, these people probably had cell phones. I mean, the first couple we talked about, Kayla, they found them because of their cell phone pings. So I don't know. It's odd to me that there's a serial killer that we're covering from the 2000s.
Because you would think that technology is such now that not only can people be tracked with their phones, but there are cameras everywhere. People are filming everything. You would think that it's much harder to get away with it. And obviously he was caught after at least these three people on his farm, and we'll get some other crimes. But think of how long this body count could have been if they didn't track those cell phones. I'm shocked that he was able to get away with what he did, but this could have been so much worse.
You're right. I mean, if this was in the 70s, who knows? We might be talking about all these missing people with no conclusion.
Absolutely.
I've wondered why he wasn't caught sooner. Like, why weren't more cell phone pings found at his farm or whatever? But so Todd also confessed to a 10-year-old case. On November 6, 2003, a customer walked into the Superbike Motorsports to find four people shot dead. The victims were 30-year-old Scott Ponder, 29-year-old Brian Lucas, 26-year-old Chris Sherbert, and 52-year-old Beverly Guy. Beverly was Scott's mother. Scott's wife remembers Todd as a disgruntled customer who had been in the shop several times. Todd's mother said that he had tried to return a motorcycle, but the employees laughed at him. Again, you know, I know that we as parents need to stick up for our kids sometimes, but if my kid murders somebody, I'm like, dude, that's on him. That's, you know,
absolutely.
There's no excuse. And trying to return a motorcycle is not enough reason to kill four people. So, of course, they refused to give his money back and teased him for not knowing how to ride. So I would say with all of his issues from his childhood, them teasing him was the trigger. You know, that probably did not go over well for him. So he allegedly came back into the shop and killed Chris as he was working. Then he killed Beverly in the middle of the showroom. Brian was at the main doorway and Scott was in the parking lot. When he confessed, Todd said that he shot each victim once in the forehead, a detail that was never released to the public. So it does sound like this confirms it was him.
And again, when we talk about serial killers, the vast majority of the time, I would say, they follow a particular MO. They stalk a particular kind of victim. They like to get them alone in a certain way. They often torture or kill them in a certain way and then try to find ways to dispose of the body. So they have kind of a routine in their killing. For a serial killer that we've covered that hires people to work at his land, kills the male, sexually assaults the female before killing her, shooting up a bike shop is out of the ordinary. And we usually don't see that kind of thing from serial killers. But this wasn't just like an angry outburst. He went to the bike shop to do this. And he actually told them he was purchasing another bike. And everybody got together to do the paperwork and to get the bike ready. And that's when he killed them. Like, he set this whole thing up because he was angry, and he waited till these four people in particular were available. So definitely a hit, definitely a premeditated murder here from Todd, but just so different from his other killings that it's fascinating. It's also said that years later in the investigation, they got a list of previous customers with criminal records and sent them letters. They sent letters to previous customers saying, "We're investigating this murder. Let us know if you know anything." What kind of, like, how does that help an investigation to send letters to people you think might have been around and seen something? Why not go to each of these people? Like, Todd received a letter saying, "This murder happened. Let us know if you saw anything." He's the one that did it. Of course, he's not going to reply. I just find that crazy that that's how they handled this.
Yeah, I'd like to see what I call boots on the ground. Like you said, going, knocking on doors. I mean, who's going to respond to a letter? I tell my people at work all the time, like, because we have to do some snooping around and trying to find people and talk to them about stuff. And I'm like, letters are the last resort. I want you to cold call people, go knock on a door if you have to. But yeah, I don't like this investigative tactic.
And to be fair, I haven't seen the letter. I'm assuming it said, "Let us know if you saw anything." Like, I would like to see it. If they sent a letter that said, "Hey, let us know if you killed these people," then I think whoever wrote that should not be working in law enforcement. After he made these confessions, they continued searching Todd's property, and authorities uncovered a lot of weapons, including a lot of pistols with suppressors, which are silencers, so you can't hear them. There are a lot of semi-automatic rifles and more ammunition than we could list here. Like, we mentioned him being obsessed with weapons and collecting them as a kid. As a felon living in South Carolina, he had a collection of weapons and ammunition that was almost beyond count. There's no record of any background checks being run before he bought any of these. So it's assumed that he bought these like person to person at a gun show, or he purchased them illegally. But the eeriest thing about this case is that they call Todd Kohlhepp the Amazon review killer. He had an Amazon account where he left comments on a variety of items like padlocks, shovels, tasers, gun accessories. Basically, he's writing reviews on a murderer's shopping list. One review for a padlock said, "Solid locks, have five on a shipping container." won't stop them, but for sure will slow them down until they are too old to care. A review for a shovel said, keep in car for when you have to hide the bodies and leave the full-size shovel at home. Does not come with a midget, which would have been nice. Of course, midget is not an appropriate word to use. That's little people, but that's his direct quote. On a page for a chainsaw, he left a comment that said, works excellent. Getting the neighbor to stand still while you chase him with it is hard enough without having an easy chainsaw to use.
So if you're like scrolling through these reviews to know if you want to purchase an item, I'm of the nature that if I saw this, I would say this guy's hilarious. But looking back on what you know he did, these are ominous.
Yeah, you would think that somebody who is killing people would not say things like this. But he is. For a knife he bought, he left a review that said, haven't stabbed anyone yet. When I do, it will be with a quality tool like this. I would think that these are sarcastic and from somebody who thinks they're funny. And I might chuckle. But this is from a killer. We don't know that he stabbed anybody. From what we know, he shot his victims. But still, this was the legacy that he left, and just goes on to show that this was his mentality about killing people, and that in his mind, it was so okay that he could joke about it publicly online on a record that could be traced.
After he was arrested, Todd told his mother that there were many other victims. When his mom asked how many, he said, you don't have enough fingers. That's, man.
As far as we know, she had 10 fingers.
But picture yourself in an interrogation room with your son, and he tells you this, like, gives me chills to think about. He claimed that he shot someone in Arizona, and as of 2016, the Tampa Police Department was reviewing cases from that time that Todd lived in Arizona. And on November 16th, police in Greer, South Carolina, announced that they had named Todd as a person of interest in an unsolved 2003 bank robbery and triple homicide at the local Blue Ridge Savings Bank. And there is no definitive link, and Todd has denied involvement in that case.
We are going to cover that particular bank robbery at some point on this show, so we'll dive into the connections there for sure. Todd ended up being charged with 4 counts of murder in relation to the Superbike shooting, 1 count of kidnapping for Caleb's abduction, 3 additional counts of murder for Charles Carver and the Coxies, and 3 counts of possession of a weapon during the commission of a violent crime. Relatives of the Superbike shooting victims also filed wrongful death suits against him, so civil lawsuits, as Kayla has filed as well. And these civil lawsuits are trying to get a monetary return for the wrongful deaths and captivity that these people suffered. They did sell the farm, but by the time that all the debts are paid off, it's going to be tough for them to ever see any money, which is unfortunate. As far as we know, all those cases are going to go the ways of the victims and their families. Just, I don't know that they're going to get a lot in return.
On May 26, 2017, Todd pleaded guilty to all counts of murder and kidnapping in a plea bargain that would keep him from receiving the death penalty. He was sentenced to 7 consecutive life sentences with no possibility of parole. At his sentencing, the defense team swore there were no other victims to be found, but Todd has repeatedly claimed that there were at least 2 other murders. He has never given authorities the details, but the FBI are investigating his other confessions. Todd is currently imprisoned at the Broad River Correctional Institution in Columbia, South Carolina.
In this plea agreement, they, as they often do, checked with all the families and said, look, this is what we're considering offering this individual. He's wanting out of the death penalty. He'll never get out of prison, and he's going to admit to everything he's done. And the families in this situation said, it would be so painful to go through a trial. We know he did this. He's never going to get out of prison. And they agreed for the state to make this deal. And again, he was confessing to, he told Kayla he had killed almost 100 people. He had bragged so much about all the people he killed, and we're seeing now that maybe there wasn't that much going on. When he was in jail, he wrote an 8-page letter to a newspaper where he said, yes, there is more than 7. I tried to tell investigators, and I did tell FBI, but it was blown off. It's not an addition problem. It's a multiplication problem. Leaves the state and leaves the country. Thank you, private pilot's license. At this point, I really don't see reason to give numbers or locations. So now he's saying that he killed people and took the bodies out of the country so they'll never be found. I think we're dealing with a narcissist that wants to claim murders that he didn't commit. Do I know that for sure? No. But based on the evidence, I have to believe that that's more likely than not to be the case.
Yeah, I really don't know. Former FBI agent John Douglas called Todd a different type of serial killer than he's ever encountered. As he puts it, he's a mass murderer turned serial killer, and the only other similar criminal he's interviewed was Dennis Rader that we've talked about. He's also called the BTK, bound, tortured, killed. But he even says that BTK's crimes had a sexual component, and Todd's were something else. He was more of a retaliation type person. John said that if he felt you were doing him wrong, he would get even. And he was very patient. He would wait months, but he was going to come back and he was going to get you. He was a different breed of cat. And that's kind of what I saw too. Like, you know, with the people at the motorbike shop, especially, they were teasing him about riding or not being able to ride his bike. So he killed all four of them. Now the couples that were, you know, Kayla and then the couple, the Coxies, I don't know what they did that he saw them as, you know, hurting his feelings in some way and he got even with them. I don't know. But there was definitely a sexual component to some of his murders and some of his crimes. So I don't know. He is a different bird, but I think there is a sexual component to it as well.
Yeah, I think there was to most of them, but maybe not all of them. I think Kayla talked about him being mad at her, and that's why he killed Charles. We know that he interacted with Megan at the Waffle House where the waitresses refused to talk to him. So maybe this was an act of revenge on her for that. Who knows? But he is certainly different than the majority of other killers that we've covered in that he killed in multiple different ways. He claims to have killed many more, which we have seen before. But such a fascinating case, and so happy that technology allowed us to capture him before we see many, many more bodies end up on that 95-acre plot of land.
I would, I would love to have a big piece of land, not to kill people on, but to hunt, ride four-wheelers. So I would say that land's pretty cheap if it's up for sale.
It probably is, and they have searched all of it and found no other bodies. And it does have a nice fence around it if you're looking.
$80,000 fence.
It's a lot of fence.
Guys, we appreciate you tuning in each and every week. We've been going 5 years strong, and we're going to make it to six and keep on going after that. We'll see how long this thing goes.
Well, you're shooting for six. I was going to say can't wait for 10, so we'll see.
Well, 1 year at a time. It's been a year, right?
Well, we appreciate you all hanging out with us through this case. Again, any ratings, reviews on social media or Apple iTunes are huge for us. Super thankful for that, and we appreciate you listening more than anything.
Until next crime, this has been True Crime Cast.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.